Frank Field has said that immigration is your party's Achilles heel, and it's become quite a toxic issue on the doorstep. You've been doing a lot of campaigning. Have you found that too?
It's a big issue. And look, you know, I've known this is a big issue for a long time. I launched my leadership campaign about 4 years ago. I think it was 4 years ago yesterday. And I talked then about immigration being a big issue. And I've changed Labour's position on this, both in our attitude to people's concerns and also on some very specific issues, whether it's our attitude to controls within the European Union or issues which I think is, in a way, the biggest question we face, which is what happens when people come here and do we see wages undercut? Because I think the biggest question our country faces is how do we make our economy work, not just for a few at the top, but for most people. And this is something that countries around the world are struggling with. And we must make sure that our attitude on immigration, our approach to immigration, which I think does benefit our country, is also consistent with that.
So a big issue, possibly a toxic issue, according to Frank Field. Are you worried that UKIP is now taking some of your traditional supporters away because of their concerns?
Look, I think this is a very unpredictable election. It's probably the most unpredictable election in a generation, and I think many people are still making up their minds. I think there is deep discontent in the country. There's deep discontent about the fact that people don't feel they're getting a fair chance and a fair shake. And look, concern about immigration is part of that.
And now, you said this morning, didn't you, we will no longer turn our back on people who are worried about immigration. Is that what Labour in power did?
Too often, yeah. Too often we dismiss people's concerns. You see, we thought that immigration was good for the country as a whole, which I believe it is, and it strengthened our country. I'm the son of immigrant parents. But we didn't recognise that immigration is a class issue. It has different impacts on different people. And people see big change in a short period of time. People worry about whether there's fairness in entitlement to benefits and so on. And most of all, and I had this in my constituency a lot, as other MPs will have done, people say, look, I'm working hard. I know there are people being paid less than the minimum wage who are being exploited, but what that's doing is it's undercutting my wages. And so I think, you know, getting to grips with this issue in the right way, it's not easy, is it really important
and
for
us. And it's Labour policy to crack down on people who aren't enforcing the minimum wage. But these people that you're talking about who are worried about immigration, they're worried about the numbers coming into this country. They think there are too many people coming here. What would Labour actually do to control immigration?
A couple of things. First of all, we've said we want proper border control. That's really important because illegal immigration is part of the issue, and this government hasn't got a great record on illegal immigration. Secondly, we've said that we would keep the cap that the government has put on migration from outside the European Union. So they put a cap that's different from their target, which they've not met, but the cap. And then thirdly, and this is tough but important, we've got to reduce the pull of low-skill migration into the UK. Now, how do we do that? Partly by dealing with the exploitation issues that I've talked about, partly by making sure there's proper training and apprenticeships for people in this country so they can better fill vacancies that are available. Now, you might say you could go...
That doesn't sound like a very strict control, though, does it? Well, what about a moratorium, as the man who used to be called your guru, Lord Glassman, suggested, have a temporary freeze on the number of migrant workers coming to this country?
Well, I don't agree with that, and I'll tell you why. Look, there is a position that says, and I said it in the speech today, let's withdraw from the European Union, for example. That's the solution. That's the wrong solution. That's the wrong solution. I'll tell you why it's the wrong solution. Because I'm here at Airbus. Airbus is a company that relies on our membership of the European Union. And look, part of the job of politicians in this is as best we can to honestly face up to what we can and can't do.
Maybe you can't control immigration then. Immigration at the moment, net migration is 210,000 people a year. Is that an acceptable level? Would it be any different under Labour?
Personally, I don't like the government's net migration target, and I'll explain why. The net migration target means that if people leave the country, that's somehow a success for us. If there are skilled people leaving the country, that's somehow a success.
Okay, so what's target for people who think
not,
there are too many?
I'm not going to make, that's part of the issue here. I'm not going to set false targets and make false promises to people. Too many politicians have done that. I do want to get low-skill migration down, but I'm not going to set an unrealistic target. I want to bear down on low-skill migration as best we can, and I think we can do that.
By the freedom of movement again,
partly,
perhaps?
Partly, Well, I think there is an issue about new countries coming into the European Union. Currently, we have 7-year transitional controls. I don't think that's enough. I think we should have longer transitional controls.
But that's not really relevant. There aren't new countries going to join for, what, 10 years, are there?
Well, it will make a difference to future accession countries, but you're right. That's
what about now?
Well, that's why I say we've got to bear down now on the impact of low-skill migration on people. Look, part of the issue is, if people can be exploited, if employers can exploit people, then that is going to undercut wages, and that is having a more of an impact on low-skill migration. There's some aspects to immigration that can benefit us. For example, if students can come here for the right reasons, if skilled people can come here. So I think it's looking at the different aspects of migration. It's doing all we can to bear down on low-skill migration. I want to get that number down, but you're inviting me to set a... I understand why.
I invite you to perhaps to make a promise and to explain how you might get migration down, and you haven't really explained that yet, have you?
Well, you're inviting me to make a promise, and I'm saying I'm not going to make a false promise. We're going to bear down as I believe we should bear down as a country on low-skill migration. I think we can do that. We want to get low-skill migration down, and indeed migration down, and I've set out some of the ways we can do that.
And what about benefit rules? Because at the moment, migrants can claim after 3 months in this country. That causes a lot of resentment. People say, I'm paying tax. You know, these people haven't paid tax, and yet they're able to claim benefits.
Well, I believe that we should make the amount of time people can claim before people can claim job seekers allowance longer, at least to 6 months, possibly longer. I think there is.
Will that be an election pledge?
Yes, I think there are issues about, for example, people being able to claim child benefit, child tax credit, when their kids don't live in this country. It's not huge amounts of money, but it's important, and that's something we also want to act on. And this is what you see from us, which is being realistic about what can be done, recognising that diversity in immigration has benefits for our country, but it's got to be properly managed.
And on the issue of the European Union, which obviously touches very strongly on immigration, Labour is only going to have a referendum if there's a further transfer of powers. But isn't that going to make reform within the European Union very difficult? Because you're not going to have any negotiating muscle. David Cameron can say, give me what I want, I've got to put this to the British people for a vote. But you're not going to be able to do that if you're elected as Prime Minister.
It's not going very well for him, though, is it?
Because let's find out. Oh, okay, I'll ask him about that. But you tell me about your policy on the referendum.
I think it's really important, because I think it's how do we negotiate and succeed in Europe. You see, he thought when he announced his referendum pledge, whenever it was last year, that somehow this would be successful for Britain. It hasn't been successful. He's got to get unanimity for any changes that he wants. He's got no support, not even from Chancellor Merkel, for the proposals that he's got. What we're saying is that we can make significant reforms in the European Union, building alliances on the budget, which has got to change, so we properly support our economy and a high-skill, high-wage economy, which the European budget doesn't do, on immigration, as I've described, and also on the powers that national parliaments have.
But don't you think the British people do want to have a vote on Europe? It's been such a long time since there was a referendum. Somebody in your shadow cabinet, former Europe Minister Jim Murphy, says, I think at some point there will have to be a referendum on the EU. My preference would be for an in-or-out referendum.
Well, that's why we've said that we will have an in-out referendum if there's any transfer of powers from Britain to the European Union.
But that's very unlikely to happen.
And I've said it's unlikely to happen with the way the European Union operates at the moment. And let me explain why, because it's a really important point that you're asking. When I think about being Prime Minister of this country, which I want to be in less than a year's time, I want to level with people about what my priority is. My priority is to tackle the generational question that our country faces, which is the break there has been between the wealth of the country and the family finances of ordinary people. That is a huge task.
But Prime Ministers can look at the economy and have a referendum at the same time, can't
well,
you?
Well, no, but let's look at the two alternatives. I'm offering the priorities being the cost of living crisis, the NHS, with a referendum log. David Cameron is offering 2 years of the Conservative Party and his government being consumed by a referendum on Europe. He can't tell us what he's negotiating for. He's got no support in Europe. He can't even tell us whether he wants to stay in or out. Now, I've got to say to you, I don't think that's in our national interest.
So vote Labour, no referendum.
That's not what I said. I said that there are circumstances where we'll have a referendum, and I've set them out very clearly, because I don't think the British people want further transfers of powers from Britain to the European Union without their consent. But I've also been very candid, and I think it's really important, you know, in this era in particular, I'm candid about my priorities for the country.
Now, you've talked about the economy and your plans for that. Your ideas for government spending are going to come under increasing scrutiny in coming years. Now, Ed Balls, the Shadow Chancellor, he says he wants to bring current spending into balance by the end of the next Parliament. Now, that would mean that you wouldn't take into account capital spending. So that means that a Labour government would be borrowing more for capital spending.
Well, let me come to that. Let me say what we've set out. We've said that we will not borrow more for current spending in 2015-16. And as early as possible in the next Parliament, we want to have a current surplus on the current budget and also have the national debt falling. Now, on the issue of capital spending, we said we do need to look at infrastructure investment. And that's something that our zero-based review is looking at. That's always been treated differently in the national accounts and the government. So it's something absolutely we're looking at.
Well, the Conservatives aren't treating it differently, though, are they? Because they're saying that they're going to get the overall budget into surplus, and that includes capital spending. Labour isn't going to do that, so that means you are going to be borrowing more.
Well, no, because we've made some specific commitments on borrowing, and how much further we go depends on our zero-based review. I think it's right that we look at the needs of infrastructure, investing in transport, education, housing, those issues. We look at the need to get the deficit down, and we also look at the overall state of the economy. And we'll set out more about our plans nearer the election. So we are looking at infrastructure, how much we need to spend. We don't actually know exactly how much the government is going to spend on infrastructure
well,
in the next
Parliament. Well, we talked to the IFS, and they said at the moment it's around £28 billion a year on capital spending. So if you're not balancing your books in the same way that the Conservatives are planning to do, that would be an extra £28 billion a year.
Well, that's why we're having our zero-based review, looking at the needs of the economy when it comes to capital spending.
I wanted to talk to you today a little bit about the style of politics. Now, we hear that you wanted to change the way that Prime Minister's questions goes and have a different style
it's
of
politics. It's not been a great success, that. I think many people have tried and many haven't succeeded.
I think we are stuck with the Yabu politics there, certainly. But what about these campaign ads that Labour have been running? You ran the one about Nick Clegg and the Cabinet. Incredibly personal, very disparaging campaign broadcast, The Incredible Shrinking Man. Did you sign off on that?
Yes, I did. And look, this was a broadcast which I thought was relatively light-hearted, but making a serious point. It was making a serious point about what's happened under this government, which Nick Clegg has been part of. They've cut taxes for the richest, they've put the bedroom tax on the poorest and the most vulnerable, and they've whacked up tuition fees when they said they wouldn't.
That's fine to make those points, but you did it in a very personal way, and you had, you know, one Conservative cabinet minister apparently not even knowing what the NHS was.
I thought it was pretty light-hearted, Martha. I think we should lighten up a bit. I mean, look, it was making a serious point in a light-hearted way. And look, we're the party that in this election has been laying out also very positive policy on the NHS, on a huge issue, which is the 9 million people who rent in the private sector and what we do about that. We've got more to come.
But these kind of ads have opened up the gates, haven't they? I mean, you're likely to become a figure of fun yourself in the election, aren't you?
That was inevitable anyway, that the Conservatives will be attacking me in the election.
But they'll be able to say you started it, won't you?
Well, you know, look, part of politics is about drawing attention to your opponent's record, and that's what that broadcast did, and I thought it did it in a good way, and also setting out a positive agenda.
There was another ad as well which talked about the rise in VAT and had a number of products which you don't actually pay VAT on, like food. Did you approve that one?
Well, look, the ad was saying that the result of the increase in VAT has put £450 on an average family's bills. They're not our figures, they're the Treasury's figures.
Yes, so, but they had peas, fruit, vegetable, biscuits, ketchup. I mean, you worked at the Treasury, you know these aren't VAT.
I mean, look, the illustrations on the ad is sort of, you know, is not, I don't think it's the biggest issue we face.
Well, I suppose it's about trust in politics, isn't it? People should be putting out things that are reliable, aren't they? And another important part of the way that your campaigning is going is you've brought over a star of American politics, David Axelrod. Are we going to see his influence strongly? Are we going to see more American-style negative campaigning?
That's not actually what David is about. You know, it's interesting about David Axelrod because I first started talking to him last August or September. And what attracted me about him is his values, actually. And he ran two campaigns for President Obama. And this is what he's been saying to us this week. I'll let you into the secret. Which is all about what he sees and what I see as an absolutely defining question for our generation. You see growing inequality in many developed countries, and the question so many people are asking, this is why I think this is such a an unpredictable election, but there is big discontent, is about whether hard work and building a good life for yourself and your family, whether that is now permanently disconnected. And so many people feel like, and you know, so the conversations I've had, and I've had many conversations with David over the last 9 months or so, they've all been about that. They've been about how, because this is my big mission in politics. And, you know, you always get your critics as leader of the Labour Party, but I've been absolutely consistent about that as my mission.
And one final suggestion for a conversation with him, because he's been tweeting about you, but he actually spelt your name wrong.
I know, that is the perils of tweeting, you see. And look, I have been a victim of bad tweeting myself, so, you know, I think, that's the kind of thing that happens.
Ed Miliband, Labour leader, many thanks indeed for joining us.
Thank you.